There's the whistle. Go, go, go! Second half, my three subs action from the Center Circle Studios.
I'm not sure what I've gotten myself into today. I will say this. I didn't bring any pre-prepared questions. We're just going to roll with it, and I've got three great storytellers with me today, and we're going back to the foundation of Memphis professional soccer today. With us today, Bob Brehm, one of the original radio broadcasters for the team, Rudy Schiffer, who helped lay the foundation of the Memphis Rogues, and a guy that got some butts in the seats for the Memphis Rogues and did a lot of stuff in the front office, Hal Downing, all joining in today. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
They told me there's no bourbon on this show. Is that right?
Well, it's a podcast. You could pretty much... Who was employed by the team first? Which of you guys? Was it you, Rudy?
Well, I was the first guy, yeah. I came in with a guy named Bill Markham, who Harry Mangorian. Harry Mangorian owned the Boston Celtics. He signed Larry Bird, and he had a good team. And he lived down in Fort Lauderdale. It was a rich guy, had a huge ranch, raised classic racehorses and stuff. And Bill Markham was a big, slow old boy, didn't have much together. But Bill convinced him, because Tampa Bay had a great team, that we could have a team in Memphis. So they put a team in Memphis, and Bill Markham ran it. He subsequently got fired for doing nothing, and I got the job as GM. I was a vice president of marketing, and I had a need a radio broadcast, and Bob was always friendly to the team, so Bob became my radio guy, along with another crazy guy who was since deceased, God bless him, Kevin Card, who was just absolutely berserk in the booth with pills and beer and stuff.
Kevin the wild card.
Yeah,
the
wild card. And Hal called me. I was at a hotel, and I got a call from, hey, this is Hal Downing. I would like to get a job at the Rogues. What do you do? Tell him, Hal.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading the newspaper, and Memphis had been awarded a team, and they had a picture of Rudy and Markham and Mangurian at the Hyatt Regency. So I called the Hyatt Regency, and I said, ring Rudy Schiffer's room. And he said, hello? And I said, is this Rudy Schiffer? He said, yeah. He goes, who's this? I said, this is Hal Downing. I want a job with your soccer team. He goes, kid, we just landed today. Come back in about a month when we got an office. So he goes, you know what? NASL requires that we have a general manager, PR director, a marketing director. You're looking at all three because the owner's cheap. You start the booster club. I can't give any money, but I'll give you 10% commission on any group sales you do. And the rest is history.
Yeah. I mean, we ran by the CDP. The ownership was out of town, you know, but Harry was a very suspicious guy. He was a Lebanese guy, very suspicious. And he'd call me two or three times a day. Well, what have you done today, Rudy? And then he called me and said, Rudy, someone's stealing beer at the stadium. Said, what? What?
He says, yeah, it was me and
said,
Kevin.
He said, you're supposed to get 60 drinks out of a barrel. You're only getting 58. And here you get evaporation, spillage. He says, we'll forget that. I get this pump. I found this pump. You put it in the keg and it'll pump every glass out, okay? So I said, you didn't do this, you're fired. So I'd come back in the office the next day and call. Are you still there? Yeah. Okay, good.
he didn't know the guy that sold beer at the stadium, Bobby Lawson.
He fired me about 15 times. Next day, he said, you still there? He finally said one day, he said, you're like a pogo dog. I said, I like you. I keep knocking you down and keep coming back for more. I won't fire you anymore. Then Bob and I, we met and had a few high times together, so to speak. Played wiffle ball.
You might say. And this wasn't your first soccer gig, though, right?
No, I worked for the Associated Press originally, covering the Green Bay Packers when Lombardi was there. That's how old I am. Then I went to Boston and worked at Raytheon and Space and so forth. But they were looking for a PR guy down in Hartford at Hamilton Sandwich, which is part of the United Aircraft. I went to work for them and covered the space shots and stuff like that. And then eventually I wound up having my own little PR firm. And a soccer team started up called the Connecticut Bicentennials with the North American Soccer League. Well, at that time I had as a client the Connecticut Yankees, the American Soccer League, which I did for nothing, just for the fun of it and experience. And I got to like it, and then the Bicentennials hired me, and they folded. And I looked around. I liked soccer then, so I folded my agency. I saw the job in Memphis. Actually, I called Joe Robbie, who owned the Miami.
The Fort Lauderdale Strikers.
And he owned the Miami Dolphins, too. And I went to see him once and his wife. They were drunk on New Year's Eve. They were drunk and they hired me. And then they forgot when I called them back. Naturally, Bill Markham was drunk when he hired me on New Year's Eve in Memphis. When I called him back, he had forgot us. I'm coming anyway, dang it. And I came down and got the job and lived with him for 6 months. Terry had no car. I had to live with him. He didn't pay his bills. The lights would go out. The gas would run out of the car. I'm just the kind of guy he was, you know what I mean? And so we founded the team and you know, we didn't have any budget worth a dang. Harry gave us, I think on 18, 19 players, we spent like $367,000, which was nothing. I mean, nothing. I mean, players and other teams were making that individual, the Cosmos, you know.
I heard you and Bob shut Overton Square down on the first night, though, so the pay couldn't have been that bad.
The beginning of the end for TGI Fridays was when Rudy and I set up camp there one night.
And Bombay Bicycle Club, yeah, vodka and Cokes with McCready.
Yeah, Eddie, all I drank was vodka and Cokes, you know, Eddie McCready. Eddie's living up in Johnson City now, up in East Tennessee. He got happily married, got a farm up there, I understand. Yeah. Have you ever talked to him?
I haven't.
We're gonna plan a trip out there. Wiley lives in Knoxville, right outside of Knoxville.
Oh, so. I don't want to see him. He was always after my job, that creep.
He's coming in for the good. Very end of the interview.
Right. So Bob, so Rudy gets into town, and you guys meet up and go have something to eat, something to drink, right?
I don't think we ate anything.
we didn't come here to eat.
Well, we got a show going. We got a show going, and Bob supported soccer. Him and Jack Eaton and Jim Sargent on TV5 really like soccer.
Yeah.
So we do a show over there on, was it Lamar? Uh-huh. Those station 60, and we'd go there, and it put us on. Jack Eaton would put us on anytime I walked in the studio. So we really supported soccer, and that was needed then because people didn't know about soccer here. You know, before I got a team, I think I spent about 200 nights and days out making speeches on soccer all over the. I go speak to two people up in Covington in the middle of the morning, you know.
And we were going to schools doing clinics.
Hal's real contribution was important. He did all the clinics. He set up the clinics. We had a little rogue soccer mobile, and he'd go out and have Cokes in the back of it. And
yeah.
It'd take place. We'd do clinics. I think we actually expedited the growth of youth soccer in this community, which was when Hal was there.
He
was
without a doubt, yeah.
And we helped grow it. I mean, that was a real contribution we left behind after the rogues left was how many more thousands of kids were playing soccer. You know, we had decent attendance. You know, we did 13,000. Outdoors, which was pretty good when you think about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the indoors at the Coliseum, we sold out with 9,200.
Every game.
We sold that out, and we won the Western Division Championship with the lowest payroll in the country. But we did some good things. But soccer was not the sport of the 70s or the 80s. And soccer, it's really come now. It's now the sport of the 20th, 21st century. Because when you look at these stadiums, Arthur Plank, who owns the Atlanta Falcons, owns the Atlanta soccer team, and he owns that
Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, he fills it up for soccer.
Yeah.
70,000 people. He fills it up. They fill it up. And they've built soccer-specific stadiums.
Malcolm Allison was
the first guy.
Officially, I guess, the first manager, but he didn't even make it to the first game. No, what was happening with that?
Well, he was a legend in England, Malcolm Allison.
You know, Manchester City, I think.
Yeah. And we had as a consultant, Harry hired Bo, what's his name from Tampa Bay, was the GM of the Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Yeah.
A consultant. And he went to England, came up with Malcolm Allison. Well, he never reported. All we're doing getting bills on his American Express card. You know, I'd get bills. I didn't even know that guy. I'm getting bills.
He's at pubs every night.
He's out drinking or having a good time in England, huh? And they finally caught up and fired him and hired Eddie McCready, who was a legend at Chelsea. Eddie McCree is 135 pounds of 98 pounds was heart and aggressiveness.
Hits you like a freight
train.
Yeah,
he was such a terrific player for Chelsea. He was almost vicious. And
he was a Ty Cobb of soccer.
They flew Eddie in March. We were playing an exhibition game up in Canton, Ohio. And Eddie flew in to meet the team. And I go to the airport and I pick him up. He comes out with like ankle length raccoon jacket on, glasses like Coke bottles, sunglasses like Coke bottles. And, "Oi, son, how you doing?" So before going to team meeting, Eddie was paranoid. Before going to team meeting, he gets me up against the wall and says, "Oi, son, I don't want you to F me." If you try to F me, I'll give it right back to you, son. I'm going to run this franchise the way I want. I say, hey, Eddie, I'm just here to help you. I'm just here to help you. You get the
play. Easy. You
know? He wanted to intimidate you from the start. That was his style, just as he was a player. There's a story about Eddie when they're playing Leeds United in England, Chelsea, and Leeds says, we're going to take care of McCready. Well, McCready says, like hell. The first time the guy ran down the sideline, Eddie took a run at him about 20 feet and did a flying mirror kick into his head and knocked him out of the game. And they didn't mess with Eddie after that.
Totally different sport back then when you could you could foul and stay.
Oh, yeah.
In the game.
It was real physical.
Yeah.
And a lot of injuries. And he was that kind of guy. And he also let you drink a lot. And, I mean, I'd go drinking with him before the game. He'd put down 30 vodkas and Coke. And he could never get drunk. Never get drunk. I never seen him drunk.
He could go all night long.
Yeah. Bombay Bicycle Club shut down many a night.
That was over and over to the square, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have to remember, Memphis didn't get liquor by the drink till the 70s. And over in the square is where it started, Ben Woodson, okay? We came in 78. I mean, it was like the early days of Prohibition being off in Memphis. And these guys come over from England, and we drank every pub dry that they had.
You know, Bob wrote a great story years ago, but after the road, called Remembering the Rogues, which was great, talked a lot about the players. The players were the heart of the team because they're so diversified, so crazy. I mean, just wild men from England came over because a lot of them came as like a holiday for them to come here, you know. They come and play soccer. There's no pressure. They got paid enough to bring their families with them, you know. And
if you think about the movie Slapshot, I mean, we were the equivalent of Slapshot.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
And I was right in there with them. I was one of the wild. I was Rudy the Rogue. I was just drinking with them and screwing around with them. I didn't give a name.
And it's amazing how the marketing company came up with that name, and it was such an appropriate name because
the song was
we only
great.
Won of two games the first year, but the teams love coming into Memphis, man. Because
well, we had a secretary used to like
we had
meeting the players.
Cheerleaders and the Vogues and all that stuff.
Wait. What did you say, Rudy?
We had a secretary like going out and greeting the teams. I won't mention her name, but she kept a picture of each one of them that she met over her desk. Anyway, we brought these guys in.
Anyway. Wall.
And they were just, we used to have these parties, man. I mean, just every game was a party after the game. And I brought a lot of American players in from Connecticut, where I had been. And they're all into grass. They're all doing grass and marijuana after the game, you know. After the game, they'll be high. They'll all disappear.
Well, the beer vendor, Bobby Lawson, he was notorious for making a big batch of cookies, okay, with a little herb infused. And he'd shake his hand. Oh, this is Bobby Lawson. He's the beer man. Okay, take your hand away. There's a cookie in there. They called him Mr. Keebler.
Bob Brehm, Rudy Schiffer, Hal Downing joining us on the podcast today. Yeah, Original Rogues from 1978. Of course, Rudy came down from the Connecticut Bicentennials. Culturally, was this just kind of a shock? It sounds like you got acclimated pretty quickly to the area.
And well, I liked it so much, I fell right into it. I mean, I tried to assimilate, you know, the Southern culture and become Southern and try to forget I had been grew up a Boston Yankee. And I get to love the South. I love it. I like it. It's a little slower way of living compared up in New York and Boston where everything's boom, boom, you got to get it done tomorrow, you know. And that was always good. And I learned how to slow down and go with it. And that wasn't the problem. The problem was the owners. Let me talk about some of the owners that I had.
Would love to hear about the owners.
Well, the first was Harry Mangorian, who owned the Celtics and had a lot of money and had a house on the beach in Fort Lauderdale that was all white. And all over the house were signs, no smoking. So one day he wanted to meet, and I brought down Eddie McCready and Kevin Card, who were both heavy smokers. And I warned him, don't smoke. But we go out to dinner, and boy, they both light up. And Harry looks at him, and Kevin's going a mile a minute telling Harry how to run the team. And Kevin was just a wild man. He was a smart kid and a great personality, but he was just wild. He was telling Harry how to, and Harry's going, yeah. Well, next day, Harry... I go see Harry in his office, and Rudy, fire that jerk. I can't. I says he's my radar guy. That's all I got. You know, I got, and he's working for me, a PR guy. You know, so we went through that, and Harry put us in his jet. He had four jets, and then would take off in Fort Lauderdale. 100 miles in the sky, come down 100 miles and be in Ocala, where he had his huge ranch. And he was such a neat freak. He had these white fences all around the ranch to keep the horses in, and every one was hand-clipped around the bottom. The grass was hand-clipped. He had a stall, stable. It was all white. You know, it was just...
Tell him the story, what he wanted you to do to go spy on Arbok.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, of all people.
Are you talking about Red Auerbach?
Yeah.
The Celtics legend?
Yeah. Well, Auerbach worked for Harry, too, of course. Okay. Red Auerbach. And after the team had folded in Memphis, he called me one day. His right-hand man called me, Steve. Rudy, you got to come down. Harry wants you to come down and play golf. Okay. What's this all about?
Are you that good of a golfer?
Well, I play golf, but, you know. So I go down to this beautiful country club, and we're playing golf, and we're talking. Nothing. About the 15th hole, he says, how should I go to Boston? Of course, my town, you know. I said, yeah, hell yes. I want you to go to Boston and spy on Auerbach. He's stealing from me. Just like I was stealing from him, you know. He's stealing from me. I said, well, Harry, I'd love to go to Boston, but when I walk in that door in the Celtics office, they're going to put cement shoes on me and make me walk down the Charles River on the bottom. Because Harry, Red has a clique. He has this clique of four guys. He had this little group, and they're all Auerbach guys. And Red Auerbach was a legend in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
I said, you can't touch him. He said, yeah, but if you find out he's stealing, we can blow him out. I said, Harry, I'm turning the job down.
I don't want to get whacked.
I said, I'm not going to Boston. Red Auerbach, I mean, I'm a peanut compared to him. And Auerbach was just the best. You know, he could light up cigars on the bench and get away with it. And when we were winning the game in Boston, he put that cigar in his mouth and smoked it. Harry sold the team when he was here with his wife, and they're going up, and they wouldn't let him come up the elevator because he didn't have a pass. We had this old booger. Remember that old guy, Mr. Somebody, who ran the elevator? He was a tough old bird. And I told him, don't let anybody up without a pass. And he wouldn't. He wouldn't let me up if I didn't have a pass. You know?
Al Brown was a stadium manager.
Yeah,
well,
he's a pain in the butt. He was always giving us.
Favorite Al, when Fogelman owned the team, he would make me come over when we had the attendance, and we had to give it to Al Brown so they could turn it in the league. But Fogelman would make me give it to him every time on a piece of paper, yeah. And he would scratch it out, add a few thousand on it. Here, go give that to Al.
Yeah, it pumped. So then Harry sold the team to Fogelman, Averin.
Fred Smith, Willard Sparks.
Well, that was later.
That was the limited partnership.
Yeah, that was limited partnership.
But Averin, right, Mr. Fogelman was in charge. Yeah.
When did that happen? How many years?
78. Okay. I mean, 79 and 80. Okay. They came in 79.
Then they had to go to work for Fogelman, which was another story. You know, he's a legend in the town, but not in my mind. He was a control freak, too. I just got rid of one. I got another one. Three times a day, he installed a teletype in my office so I could send him messages on the Western Union teletype, you know. Here's what we got to work at 9 o'clock, and here's what I'm going to do today. Then at noon, I had to send him an update. And at the end of the day, I either go up his office or call him and tell him what I did all day long. Now, he'd come in the office on Saturday mornings, like at 9 o'clock, which is kind of a day off, but I was in there. He'd come in and he'd sit by the front door to see who was coming to work and what time they came in. You know, a little freaky, you know.
But Rudy was there?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I loved the job. I loved the job, you know. I was making $25,000 a year.
Which was good money back then.
Which is, you know, comparatively speaking, but when Nelson Scalabania bought the team for him, he gave me $55,000. So you can see, I didn't mind going to Canada.
Oh, you did move to, you did move to Calgary.
The Rogues and came to Calgary Boomers. And we had basically the same players. We had a lot of tough English players. Well, indoor translated into really good players because they were so tough. And we led the league in red cards. A red card being, for you folks out there that don't know soccer from an orange, is when you create a bad penalty, you get thrown out of the game if you get a red card.
Yeah.
And we led the league in red cards because we kicked everybody's ass. When
slap shot.
Out. You know, the typical scores in those games like 11 to 12 and 15 mm-hmm. to 10. Our games were 3-2. You didn't score. We could only score. We scored enough to win, but you didn't score. And that was a key. And we sold out indoors. We had a great indoors year.
That was unbelievable. We sold out every game.
I love the story about a lot of the guys on the team, personnel, didn't have the first clue about indoor soccer, and you basically had to piece a field together. Can you share that one with us, Hal?
Daryl May, I guess, was over the Coliseum then, I think. And
he's a good guy.
And they had, you know, Memphis had the old River, some farm hockey team. So we had the dasher boards and the floor, but we had to buy the turf to put on top of it. And then we sold the signage, you know, on the dasher boards for advertising, so we made a little extra money doing that. But, you know, I mean, I was still playing at the time, but I'd never even seen an indoor game. And we sold that first game out of us going around telling everybody, this is the greatest sport in the world. We'd never seen it. Yeah. But if we sold it out, and it was louder. It was so loud in there. If you remember old Memphis State-Louisville basketball games, it was louder than that.
Well, I used to sit behind the bench, and Fogelman sat behind me with his family. And I had a kid that always just keep bringing me beers. And Paul would be yelling in my ear, turn up the noise loudest, Harry. Aaron, as loud as you can go.
And he would play that Memphis, Tennessee song over and over and over, man.
Bob was trying to do radio. How did you ever overcome all that noise, Robert?
The magic of good headphones. No, I didn't have a problem with it. It was magical. I mean, it really was.
Yeah, Kevin Carden. How'd you keep him under control?
Kevin, his
pregame prep was
he
Budweiser.
Well, you know, that's where all that beer was going that was missing.
Yeah.
there was a beer stand, which, of course, it was free to the media, and it was right outside the broadcast booth. So we go to a commercial break, and I said, I got it this time. Man, I go get, you know, go
I'll get
two beers.
Next round. Like Harry Carey.
But then there was that magical day at the Liberty Bowl, about halfway through the second season, I guess, when Kevin didn't, and you know, when he says, we called him the wild card, because he really was. You didn't know what he was going to do, but you knew it was going to be memorable. And he didn't like the job that whoever was doing public address at the time didn't like the job that
Tom Stocker.
I don't think Tom was doing it. We're at halftime, and he got so angry, and he said, "I got to go check on this problem. I mean, this is not acceptable." And he never came back. He had other duties with the team.
But he got on that PA the last game of the season, and that's when. That was Kyle Rowe Jr.'s last game as a professional, too, at our stadium. But the referee would make a call, and he'd say, what do you think about that call, fans? Oh, Rudy's going, get him off the microphone, man. We're going to get written up. Then we had a halftime show with this Memphis Blues band. It was like 1,000 people marching all over the field, and it was a TV game. And I'm down there on the field, and Rudy's going, get him off the field, man. We're getting fined. Fogelman's up in the booth. Just get those guys off the field.
But we had some good. We got by. We figured out a way to get by. Like, we picked up two young kids on loan, sort of, from Chelsea and Crystal Palace.
Crystal Palace,
David Stride from Chelsea was a terrific left back with a terrific leg foot. And Smiley, who was played at Crystal Palace, who could run, called him a road runner.
Yeah.
And they were like 17. Well, when we played the Cosmos, who had the best players in the world here, we beat them. Well, how do we do that? People ask me. Well, it wasn't a secret, but we knew our field was only 58 yards wide. And it's supposed to be 70.
It was like a bumper pool table.
So we knew that they liked to play out wide because they had great wings and feed it into Giorgio Canalia, who could put them away in the middle.
Sure.
But if he couldn't get the ball, we had a chance. Well, we played defensively and packed the whole field with players to get through, and they couldn't score. They had this great Brazilian.
Carlos Alberto
kicked Phil Holder in the Nuggets and got a red card, and that helped us because now we were playing 10 stars instead of 11, you know. But in the game, David Stride, who could run, he could run like a bandit. He flies down the left wing. He hits a shot across into the middle, and Tony Field, who who played for the Cosmos year, who was the MVP the year before that we had traded for, was now playing for us, was standing on top of the box about 25 yards out, and Stride puts the ball on his foot, and he hits it one times and into the net. And we upset the Cosmos 1-0, which is probably one of the biggest upsets.
It hit worldwide news, man.
Probably one of the biggest upsets of soccer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Bob recounted a couple of months ago on one of our podcasts, the post game, what the players had said, Tony Field and John Huska talking about that game, how it shocked the world. And plus, Tony Field, I think, probably was happier than anybody else to come back and bite the Cosmos in the butt on that. I remember you had some commentary.
Yeah, Huska in the commercial appeal the next morning. Ray Jordan, who covered the team for the CAA, was interviewing Huska. And John said, you know, the Cosmos have it here, rubbed his fingers together, indicating they got the money. He said, but we've got it here. And he tapped his chest.
Well, Huska. Huska was a sweet kid. And he had an agent. He was one of the few kids that had an agent at a big firm in Cleveland. And after that season, he had a great – everybody liked Huska. Like, Huska, Huska. And he had a great, you know, image of himself, which is a little different.
He
than
was like the All-America boy.
Yeah, but it's a little different. So I had to negotiate the contracts the second year. So John comes in and says, well, I want a big raise and this and that. I said, well, I said, John, I don't think so. You know, you only won 2 games. Well, it wasn't my fault. I said, okay, well, I said, he says, I want a raise. I said, I can't give it to you. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'll have to trade you. He said, you wouldn't do that. I said, come here. So I bring him over the teletype machine. I sit down and get the league address and says, Memphis puts John Huska on waivers as of today. I'm typing it out. And he goes crazy. He says, stop, stop. I'll play. We subsequently we had to replace him with
Bob Stettler.
Bob Stettler was
another, he passed away. God rest his soul.
When he got done playing, he went up and lived naked in the woods up and up in New York.
Yeah,
he was just a wild.
He was a wild,
but he was a great indoor player. He was.
He was a great keeper. I mean, he broke his hand. He played with a mitt.
Yeah,
just cast him up real good. And a goalie indoor with a broken hand. I mean.
Yeah, we had
those things are coming in 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, we had some players like Bobby
Thompson, right?
Bobby Thompson
played for England 11 times. Charlie Cook played for Scotland about 30 times.
He was
the Bonnie Prince of Chelsea. You know, we had some really good players, and
we had a solid defense. And, you know,
but they weren't in shape, and they didn't take being in shape very, you know, to heart, and they liked living it up night before the game, after the game, and.
What about those young English lads? Did they have a good time over here?
Oh, yeah. Stride brought his old man over once. We had a party at the Pine River, that
Pepper Tree Apartments.
Pepper's dumps out there. All the players, I got them free. And one night we're having a party after the game, and I'm half blast. I'm laying under the kitchen table with a beer in my hand, half passed out. And Stride comes over with his dad from England. Hey, Father, hey, Pop, he's. This is our chairman, Rudy Schiffer. He looked at me. A little different than England, but when the chairman was Lord Brayburn and people like that.
So when did they have more fun, home at home or on road trips?
Well, it's hard to say.
I can road address the road trip part because they're 17 years old. They were good-looking kids, and anybody
could,
knows anything
they could
about
run all night, they could eat all night, and they could do the other thing all night.
And they would, and every single city we went to, I would know, just hang around and take the rejects because I'll do
something's
well.
Gonna happen. Something's
when
going
they
down.
Went out, I'd go out with them. We'd go partying, and they introduced me as the owner of the team.
So we did get kicked out of a few hotels on the road.
We had a memorable trip to Seattle. I guess you went on that. Seattle and Vancouver at the end of the season. And, Jean Duchateau, who I've seen a couple years ago, played a goalie. And he was 6'5", but we're playing Seattle, and they had that Jeff Hurst, who scored 3 goals against Germany for England in the World Cup, to win the World Cup. And he was great in the air. And I says, Eugene, this guy is in the air. He's a tiger. You got to get out and stop him. Don't let him get... Well, he scored a couple goals on us. I says, I got to do something. So I had a contact in Hong Kong. I sent him to Hong Kong to play with a Chinese team. in Hong Kong on loan to learn how to play air balls. Well, he calls me up. Hey, Rudy, I got it down pat. I can do it now. I says, oh, dang it. You better. They're only 5 foot six, so you better beat them in the air. We finished the game in Seattle, and that night I get calls. Hey, Rudy, we're on an island in Seattle Harbor. How are we going to get back? I take the ferry up to Vancouver. I mean, you guys are all over the place. I don't know who's going to show up. We go to Vancouver. I go out. I come in the hotel about 2 o'clock in the morning before the game. And I hear this noise in the cell. They had a pub in the cell, the King George Hotel. It was a pub. I got all the players around there drinking at 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, we went out, put the wrong uniforms on. Next day, got hell for that. Got fined. One of our Yugoslavian players kicked one of the guys in the head on the sideline. He got thrown out. And we won the game. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I started to write a book about it, but it was so many slanderous things I had to say, and I couldn't publish it. One game we had Stetler and Paul Connell got arrested. They went to a concert here in town. They pulled the pants down, mooned the crowd, and they got arrested. We had to bail them out. Aaron called me, wanted me to fire him. I said, Aaron, we just can't fire him. We got contracts. You know, get rid of him.
That's what the morning news was, that story. Yeah. You know, two Rogues players dropped their trowel at the concert last night.
But those are the Rogues. You know, we were the Rambling Rogues of Memphis.
Kevin Carr
is the game.
I was going on a road trip with him one time, and at 3 in the morning, Kevin calls me and says, hey, Hal, listen, I get one call, you're it. He goes, I'm in jail. I said, Kevin, we got to get on the plane like 2 hours. He goes, my mom was the director of the Bar Association, so I said, all right, let me call her real quick. So, Mom, she called the judge like at 3 in the morning. He gets out, shows up the next morning on the plane, and he's had these red marks on his wrist. And I said, God, they put those cuffs on you a little tight. He goes, those are booster burns.
Well, what was the lyrics of that song? We're the Ramblin' Rogues.
The Ramblin' Rogues of Memphis.
Off the field and on the field.
Had their share of fun on and off the pitch. But generally speaking, were most of the guys just generally good guys?
Yeah, I mean, there are always a couple of jerks. Guys that, you know, thought they were still superstars in England or whatnot. Guys wanted more money. I remember Jorge Berrio, who played for Argentina. We brought him up, and he was a pretty good defender. And but his first year he played, he only played in about 9 games. He was always injured or something, or didn't start. And so when it came time for him to go, this is when Averin owned the team and Dean Jernigan tried to run it. And Jorge comes to my office, and he says, I want the raise, I want the car, I want the apartment. And Jorge, you didn't play that much. Yes, I played a lot. I had the stats on my desk. I pulled out here. 9 games. You ain't getting anything. You play the same money you made last year if you want to stay. I go on to see Mr. Jernigan. So he goes next door to see Dean, and Dean gives him a raise, gives him a car, an apartment. Everything he wanted, a secondary run-of-the-mill player. He comes in my office and gives me a double finger and laughs and walks away, you know. Then Tony Field and John Faulkner wanted big raises up to $60,000, which is way above our budget, you know. And we paid that to Paul Child, who was worth it, and Paul Connell. And I wouldn't give it to him, but Aaron said, no, give it to him. We don't want to make waves. Just give him a raise. I mean, you got no budget for that, you know. So we gave him raises. We had all these players making a lot of money. I finally traded John Faulkner, and they put up signs in the stadium. Trade Rudy. My son got pissed off and walked over to want to fight with the guy that had that sign up.
Hey, you mentioned Paul Child. He was really good in the 1980 season, then he went on to continue to be really, really productive. Yeah. How did you get Paul Child in here?
We traded for him. I mean, he was another tough English player. Really had his shoulders on, but his game is like Canals was in the air.
Yeah.
They were great in the air, but they couldn't score on the ground. And a Canal couldn't score indoor for some reason. Because everything played on the ground.
Canal was more finesse.
Yeah. And they were terrific players in the air. And, of course, we had a lot of young American players that we had to have for budget. We were only paying about $15,000 a year. And, we did the best we could with what we had. And we didn't have any money to spend on players. But
yeah, Rudy was cutting deals all over town, apartments for tickets.
Yeah, but
the
fans loved it because we were the Rogues.
Yeah.
We were entertaining on the field. You know, we fought and scraped and bit and cursed and on the field and off the field. We had the greatest slogan in the world, that fearsome elephant soccer.
Right.
Soccer outfit was the best slogan, I think, in the whole league.
Oh, I think so.
And you guys were everywhere. I don't know who did the scheduling. Hal, was that you? But that was the youth clinics out at Wilson Field, out at Willow Field, and there weren't that many fields in the city of Memphis.
No, I mean, when I started playing, there was one soccer field in Memphis, Wilson Field by Fox Meadows Golf Course.
Yeah, that's our legacy that we had, we left behind. You know, there are some teams that follow us, but they were Christian-based teams. We were Satan-based. A little different.
Could it be Satan?
Yeah, that actually is. I had moved to Dallas. Well, when the team was sold, I mean, that was 25% of my income. And so about that time.
Wasn't much, was it?
You moved to Dallas then, Bob?
When the Rogues were sold and moved, I ended up moving to Dallas. And then I was back in Memphis a few years later after I'd gone to Dallas to see a friend of mine who happened to be working for the Memphis Americans, which Kyle Rote was the coach and general manager at the time. And she said, have you ever met Kyle? And I said, no. And she said, well, come on. So I walked in, and I mean, within 5 minutes, literally, and I may have mentioned this to you before, Tim, Kyle said, and my friend was leaving, she was the PR director, and she was leaving the job. So I'm talking to Kyle, and within 5 minutes, he said, well, you're in Dallas, but you're from Memphis. I said, right. He said, you want to come back? You know, Mary's moving out. You can come right in. And that's how I got involved with the Americans.
Rudy went to Calgary, and Dean Jernigan asked me what I was going to do, and I said, I'm going to go back operating computers, I guess, because I was working for the city of Memphis on their big mainframe system. I said, I guess I'll call Fred at FedEx or Holiday Inn or whatever. And he said, well, why don't you come to work for us in the apartment business? And I said, the apartment business? I don't think so. Anyway, I did, and the rest is history. I mean, I had a great career there, from there to Wall Street, and it all started with the sport of soccer for me. If I wouldn't have played, I never would have had a chance to meet Rudy the Rogue.
Yeah. When did you guys know that the move to Calgary was going down? When did you know the team had been sold? Like, how much of the season?
At the end of the season,
left?
At the end of 1980 season, it was within 30 days, wasn't it, Rudy? I mean, it was quick.
Yeah, Scalabania, Nelson Scalabania was a wealthy Vancouver businessman who owned the Atlanta Flames hockey team, and he owned Wayne Gretzky. He moved the Atlanta Flames to Calgary, and they built a new stadium for him. And he bought the Rogues, and he sold Gretzky to Peter Pocklington in Edmonton. You know,
rest is history on that, right?
Like selling Babe Ruth. You know?
Both big real estate guys. Yeah.
And we all went to Canada. I went up first to break the ground, and first time I met Nelson, he picked me up at the airport and asked me what I was making, and I told him $25,000, I'll give you $50,000, $55,000. Get together, and he was 500 miles away, and I set the whole team up. Brought virtually all the players up with me, and some of the front office.
Yeah, Steve staff. Bradshaw and Bo and, Melson went up there. Yeah, didn't
Charlie,
Bo go with
Charlie, him? All, basically, yeah. And Al Miller, the famous American coach, became my coach. And Charlie still stayed on as a player in most of the players. And we played in the Calgary indoor. We played in the Calgary Corral. it was a little indoor hockey arena. We played there, and we sold that out. And we played outdoors at the Stampede. The Stampede, I forget the name of the Calgary stadium. We played outdoors. We had a good team. We brought a lot of Germans in then. I always had a connection in Germany.
Rudy actually asked me to go, but I had to stay behind to go ahead and marry my ex-wife. Yeah,
you married your ex-wife?
4 years with the Rogues, and she said, yeah, you can go up there and have fun in Canada, but I'm not going to be here if you get back. I called Rudy. I can't come, Rudy.
I think a byproduct of the NASL days, and I know it folded, and of course it's come back in different iterations, but one of the byproducts is that was the first generation of fans to really get educated, and now their parents or they are grandparents of kids and grandkids who are playing. So you've now got a second or third generation of fan that's a lot more educated, more savvy about the sport, and therefore more loyal to the sport because they can identify it. They've played it. The players.
They played it since they're kids now, see?
Yeah.
All the kids are playing soccer. And even more so now because they're putting a lot of pressure on football because of concussions. And there's a lot of people saying, I won't let my kid play football because they're worried about lifetime injuries. So soccer, youth soccer is really burgeoned. I mean, become a big thing. And that's has now developed players. We have some of the best players in the world. Again, like Pulisic, whatever your name is, that 20 years old plays for Chelsea. He's on the national team. We got some great players on the national team.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, we had Richard Mulrooney in here recently who played on the national team and played in MLS, and he talked about growing up here in the culture. While he does remember a little bit about the Rogues, he does remember the fact that the Americans, he would go to the games and watch about half the game. I mean, he was in elementary school, watch about half the game, go out in the hall with one of those mini soccer balls.
Yeah, that's what they used to do. We had more kids in the hall watching than watching in the indoor games.
But,
yeah.
You know, the fact that the Rogues were here and began to grow that following, and then the Americans tapped into that.
When I came back to work with the Americans, I had to, and here I was media relations director. I had been around the Rogues, and I mean, you know, we were just hellraisers, and that extended down to the broadcast booth, too, you know, which in later years got me in trouble. But I went to Kyle, and I said, look, I know a lot of people from the time I was with the Rogues, and they remember the Rogues, and they remember Eddie McCready drinking vodka and Coke all night long. And I don't think there were, I don't know if there were any players who you could, you know, you would not run into in the bar. That's it. So hanging out with the Rogues and now with the Americans, Kyle Rote is the head coach and general manager. Kyle Rote, you know, doesn't, as far as I know, never has been a drinker.
And Athletes in Action was an ownership part of that yep. league, too. So it, and was, I said, it was more Christian
so
based.
Now they're saying, well, I don't get it with the Americans. And so my question to Kyle was, you know, are the Americans a Christian soccer team or just a soccer team that happens to have a lot of Christians on it? He said, it's the latter. I said, well, you know, the late, great Helmut Dudek and Bernd Holzenbein, because, yeah. You know, they were with the team. And Dudek, I mean, he could knock that wall down with his shot. I mean, he had a rocket of a foot. But we're staying in a hotel that had a Playboy Club in the lobby. So I go down, and Bernd and Helmut are there, and they're just speaking German. And they were drinking. And they're going back and forth, and these bunnies are walking by, you know, scantily clad, obviously. And so Bernd said something to Helmut. Helmut turned around and looked at me, and I said, what did you just say? He said, I'm in love. But, yeah, there were a couple of the Americans would go out for a beer, and the Germans did. Other than that, no.
Yeah,
they didn't. And they weren't prudish about it.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts, angry exultations, any pronouncements, anything else that we missed?
No, I'd like to pay tribute to some Rogues players passed away, to Bobby Thompson, who died in England a few years ago.
David Stride.
Yep. Yeah. John Faulkner, Bob Stettler. Stettler, boy, I tell you, he was something else.
Well, wow. I'd also like to mention one of my key guys in that whole thing in soccer, and it was my son Michael, who passed away last year, and that's left me with a heavy heart. But his birthday was yesterday, you know, Michael.
Yeah,
and we know guardian of his son who lives with us, Ashton, is doing very well at Christ the King School. I've even become a Christian again, which is nice to say.
Yeah,
in my heart, God found me at last. I didn't put my hands on the TV like Bob.
You know,
you guys lived an experience together. I mean, you guys lived through an era that a lot of people loved, and it sounds like you kept a lot of those relationships after the fact.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was a short time, but it was a special time that, you know, even decades later, you know, you were able to
Roman Russell, who was a player with us, has a big estate, I'll call it, down in Florida on the Julington Creek by the ocean. And I was down there. He invited me down to come down for the World Cup with Eugene Duchateau and Kevin O'Neill and guys like that. So every World Cup we meet down at his place, and he sets up a soccer
field. Yeah, I still stay in touch with Huey O'Neill.
Yeah. And
so you got Duchateau back from China then.
Yeah.
He made it back. Hal, Rudy, Bob, thank you for blessing us by coming by the podcast, spending some time with us. And I hope this won't be the last time that we'll get a chance to chat. And, guys, thanks so much.
All right.
Hey, thank you, Tim. Thank you.
Thank you.
More next on My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
I love talking soccer, but I also love talking about real estate, too. And people ask me about both a lot. And one of the big questions I get in real estate is, how's the housing market? The housing market looks great, and interest rates are near historical lows. And really, it all comes down to, when is the time right for you? If you're ready to make your move, give me a call. Tim Van Horn at Cry Like Realtors, 901-756-8900 is my office number. Brody, can I give him my cell number? Oh, I can? Okay. 901-262-5000. That's my cell phone. You can also go to my website, timvanhorn.com. I can help you with your move around the block, around the city, around the state, and even around the world, too. I have a network of relocation certified agents just ready to help you. They are dying for your business, and I can put you in touch with those. All it takes is pick up the phone, give me a call. 901-756-8900. That's my office number. You can call me at my cell, 901-262-5000. Or just go online. Check me out at timvanhorn.com. That's timvanhorn.com with Cry Like Realtors.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. And we have added time to the podcast.
Tim, a couple weeks ago, we had the angry ref in to talk about some rule changes.
It's a grumpy ref, by the way. Get it right. Because he'll text me in a grumpy way.
He was mean. Looked at me with a card-eyed.
All right, so angry ref, grumpy ref.
Angry, grumpy ref. Sharing the new changes.
He inspired you.
Yes. Well, yeah. To talk about some new tactics that I think could be pretty beneficial to some clubs.
This is the first I've heard of it. You know what? I'm going to kick back. I am all ears.
All right. So, one of the new rules is you can challenge, basically, a goal kick, right?
Once it's touched, right? It doesn't have to leave the box.
Yeah, it doesn't have to leave the box or anything like that. All right. Also, there's a new kind of stipulation when it comes to offsides, and there's just a whole new attacking rule. And I think it's to make the game more attacker-friendly, okay? At least that's how I read it into it.
All right, where are you going with this?
Poachers.
Poachers?
Yes.
Do you want people shooting elephants and rhinoceroses?
Shooting gulls, and basically shooting the giant elephant in the room, and that is the gull.
Okay.
I want poachers on the field. All right. So you take one of your wingbacks or whatever, or your wingman, right? And you basically park them in the attacking third and leave them there.
Okay.
You might get an offside call once or twice, but for the most part, that ball gets touched out of the box. Go. You're in there.
And just sprint in.
That's right.
All right.
You're talking five goals right away.
Devil's advocate.
Okay.
What about long goal kicks? That pretty much nullifies that.
Well, you're going to have to force that. See what I'm saying? Like, eventually, you're going to have to force that team to take the long goal kick. All right? But it ain't going to happen.
Okay. So your plan is to discourage the short ball.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Which is going to be played a lot out of the back. I guarantee it.
And you're talking about poachers, and you're talking about an offside position, but you're talking about in the run of play, not goal kicks, right?
Well, primarily in the run of play.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there are no offsides on goal kicks.
But what I'm saying, that's what I mean. That's why your poacher is going to sit there and press into that goal kick.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Like, stand right on the 18 line.
Hey.
And I dare you.
Dare you. Kick it at me, bro. I got this. It's me and you, pal. It's Wild West style.
Pretty good.
Thank you.
See a little tumbleweed on the sideline, you know, going down.
Come on, that's great news. I mean, you see what I'm saying? Like,
so that was your
new tactic, new rule, and that is poachers.
That's it? It's just put a guy that can score goals on the 18? That's it?
And leave him there. It's a new position. It's called poacher.
And no matter where the run of play is, just leave him.
Just leave him down there.
You know, I think in the movie Semi-Pro, I think that's the in basketball, I think that's the Jackie Moon position.
Exactly. He stands under the basket and just leave him there. Essentially, that's what you're talking about. You're talking about little dunk plays, you know?
So you just want to, you're just a cherry picker.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And your rules have set you up for that. Your new rules have set you up to basically have a cherry picker on the pitch at any given time. The entire time Grumpy Ref is talking, that's all I'm thinking about. Is, all right, well, I know what my tactic is, and that is just cherry pick the mess out of this team.
Well, would this cherry picker have some help? Because if you've got a couple of guys playing out of the back, I mean, he can run all day, but...
I think where your help comes in is from the long ball in. Serve it into him. He's not going to be offsides most of the time.
Okay, so you're talking about an attack.
Essentially, you keep that gas pedal gone with pedal to the metal with that cherry picker.
See, I'm so confused now because I thought you were talking about defending the short goal kick, and now it sounds like you're talking about just hoofing a goal kick an ungodly amount of yardage down to that guy.
Okay, so you're talking about the attacking. So here's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Attacking team.
By the way, we have good microphones, so if you want to draw this up on a piece of paper, I'm sure our audience can see this.
They're going to see this. Okay, so they attack.
We need to take a picture of this and post this on our website, too.
Okay, so your attacking team, right? All right, he's coming down, all right? And uh-oh, goal kick.
Okay.
All right? Uh-oh. All right. Here's where your cherry picker comes in.
Let's give these guys names. Let's say Messi. Let's just call him Messi.
Okay, Messi. Messi comes in, and he's going to be your cherry picker, all right? Okay. Messi is new. Messi is over here. And then your keeper.
Okay.
He's taking the goal kick, right?
Who are we going to call?
Howard.
Okay. All right.
Close to home.
Is he good? If he's not good, we're not calling him Howard.
No, he's not good. He's.
If he's not good, then we're going to call
him. Let's call him.
Van Horn.
Okay. Van Horn's in the goal.
Okay.
Van Horn, back here, ready to take the goal kick, right?
All right.
Oh, but Messi's right here. He's in my cherry picker. So Van Horn's looking at it and goes, I can't really take a too short of a kick here, but there's nothing really going in the upper part, and you've been practicing with these new rules, this short dump play out to your defenseman on the right. Okay, it's a goal kick on the right. You short kick out to the defenseman on the right. Except for Messi, your cherry picker, is going to intercept that pass now because he's running full-fledged.
So he can run faster. High tilt. So now he can run faster than the ball. Messi.
Well, Messi's outsmart you because that's his only job right now. It's a cherry pick.
Okay.
So that's his only job. Is to take a look at where your backs are and say, okay, you've got option 1, 2, or 3. And more than likely, because it's on the right, you're not going to cross the face of the goal because that would be silly. I'm standing in front of it. You're probably going to go right. Right?
Okay.
So, bam. He cherry picks your pass. Instant goal. 4-0. 5-0. 6-0. The score gets run up because of these new rules.
I love your tactic for youth soccer. Beyond youth soccer, that is the biggest waste of energy I've ever seen.
It's brilliant.
You know, if our guest next week, who is a coach, was in here, he'd probably tell you the same thing. You know what? I might use that for my club team, for my under 11s, my under 10s, because you got a goalkeeper that maybe can't clear the box. So you're going to have Messi run an extra mile and a half
in the hopes. Not even a
it
mile.
It adds up.
Like 15 feet.
It's like trips to the fridge add up on the step counter.
Yeah, sure. Those are my
trips to the bathroom at night.
Yeah, I mean, okay. In that regard, yeah, it's going to add up.
When you get older, you'll understand.
Yeah, sure. But you're talking an extra 15 feet in a run. That's nothing. It's either going to force the kicking team, the goal kick team, to quicken the pace, okay? But as soon as you start, you know, taking a long time to kick a goal kick, forget about it. That's a goal.
I'm trying to figure out how to ask this in a respectful way.
Are you stupid?
No. How long did you spend on this?
The entire time he's talking, I'm sitting there going, well, just put a poacher in front of there.
I like the theory of it. The practicality, it
out the window, huh?
I like the way it's drawn up. I like it, and I see where it can be applied.
Yeah.
But it's very limited.
I just don't see it working.
How many goal kicks do you watch during a match?
How many do I watch?
Yeah, like a baker's dozen, right?
I watch them all. However many. There might be, you know, 12, 13 a match. It might be 25, just depending on the attack.
Right, yeah. Depending on the attack. Well, this would force the team to attack, okay, because you want a goal kick at this point. All right? And so they serve a ball out long once or twice. Still, go odd 50-50. That half of them go long, half of them go short. Those short ones are always contested with the cherry picker.
Now, can the other team slide a midfielder or other defender back to give another option?
Put a man on him, right? Put a man on him. Sure. That negates your attack then, your counterattack. Bam.
Please take a picture of that. We must have that uploaded to the website.
It's brilliant. I'm going to put X's and O's.
And you know what? I don't know if you want to copyright that.
X's,
or if you want, yeah. or if you want to share that freely with other club teams.
Yeah. X's are my goal kick team, and O's are my...
So, if you have a goalkeeper who sees a guy standing on the 18 and decides to pass it in a path in which this guy could run, then this is pretty much a flawless plan.
Yes. Yes, flawless. Victory. Victory be happy.
Please, yeah. You got to absolutely post this. You got to post this. And we want to hear your take on this, too, at my3subspodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at my3subspodcast, on Facebook by the same moniker, and at my3subsoccerpod on Instagram. We want to thank our sponsors for tagging along for the ride with us today. And, of course, we want to thank our guests, Rudy Schiffer. We want to thank Hal Downing.
Talk about a wild ride.
And we want to thank Bob Brame as well. Yeah, this could be the craziest episode we've had. And, plus, it brought the word shenanigans out for today as well. It's the word of the day.
Yeah.
So it's great. We got a great guest lined up next week. And check us out online at my3subspodcast.com. We thank you for listening. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Heck, tell your enemies as well. It might be the bridge that helps bring everybody back together.
Yeah, that's it. We're just bringing the world together in harmony and cherry pickers.
One cherry picker at a time. For Brody Scott, I'm Tim Van Horn. Have a great week. This is My3Subs.
There's the whistle. Thank you for listening. Check out more of My3Subs podcast, A Soccer Odyssey, at 101.9kissfm.com and on the iHeartRadio app.